Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team, cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 10, season 15. We got there. We got to the end of another season, but I didn't get there without a little help from my friends. And today, my friends are, hello Jack Bendin.
Hello Tony Simpson, it's nice to be back on Absolute Rally, sorry for my short absence.
You've been away forever.
I know, it feels like forever, honestly. It's really left a hole in my week, so I've really missed it.
I don't know whether to take that as sincerity or sarcasm.
Honest sincerity. I really, really do mean that. I have missed it.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you're back then. And Ryan Champion's coming up a little bit later on. And so we've got Trevor Agnew now. Hello, Trev.
Hello, Tony Simpson. Welcome back, Jack Bennion. We don't like you having a hole in your week.
No. Now, all of you that listen to, and we've had some really, really good download figures, by the way, over the last few weeks, guys, and I really do appreciate it. But nobody noticed my faux pas with regards to the people who were missing from last week's programme. I called Trevor Agnew Trevor Senior, obviously mixing him up with another former WRC co-driver, David Senior. Nobody else has mentioned it. Normally you guys jump on me when I get something wrong like that. And as I was telling Jack Bennion the story, just as we started setting up the call and we started merging calls, the first thing that Trevor Agnew said, "You called me Trevor Senior last week." So it does go to show the guys listen to the program, and because we need it in the download figures. So there you go. Boys, we're recording this on Thursday. So we've just had Shakedown on Corsica. Chris Meek as ever. I'll come to you first, Trev. Chris does like a Shakedown, doesn't he? He always seems to go very well on Shakedown.
Yeah, Shakedown and on dry tarmac, which I think it was in Corsica. Remember, his last time on dry tarmac was the power stage in Monte Carlo, where he beat everybody, I think, by about 3.9 seconds, wasn't it? So if he's stating his intentions again, you've got to look at him seriously. Chris Meek, I would like to think it's the alignment of the planets in this rally. Everything will come together for him. Some of the mistakes we've seen in the past could potentially have came from the recce. He is quite good at putting together new notes, and 75% of the rally's new. He's got Seb Marshall with him as well. 60 pages of notes, I believe, on some of this, some of the stages. So from a co-driver's point of view, it is a hell of a rally. It's not one that I really enjoyed that much in the past because there's so little margin for error. You've got a mountain on one side, you've got a drop on the other, and or a wall that's stopping, you can over the drop. And it was never the most enjoyable rally for me, but hopefully Chris Meek, if he has his happy head on at the end of stages then, and everything flows and he gets into that rhythm, I think he'd be a hard man to beat this weekend.
Trevor Agnew, that was fantastic how you seamlessly managed to get in that you've done this rally. It was without doubt, that was seamless, because out of all of us, you're the only one that's done it. And I was going to come to that, by the way. Let me ask Jack first. Right, Jack, I've just watched the Shakedown, bits of the Shakedown and stuff like that. Do you believe, and I had this moment, and I almost chastised myself, but I'm going to say it out loud. Right, do you believe that there's certain drivers at Shakedown who don't perhaps want to go quickly? On purpose, and kind of lull their rivals perhaps into a false sense of security?
I don't know if it's trying to lull rivals into a false sense of security. I think it's trying not to ruin the car before the start of the event would be the kind of thinking I'd go for. If I was a WRC driver, I'd want to get my car set up nicely. I'd want to know everything was prepared for the rally, for the conditions, and that my car was in the absolute optimum window, ready to go. We know how close the competition is in the WRC at the moment. So you need to have the car in the right window. You need to know that you've got what it takes to beat the opposition. So for me, I think it's more of a, you know, you can't win Shakedown. Actually, funnily enough, Chris's quote from this morning, which I'll take from Autosport and read to you now, is there are no points for Shakedown, which is a bit of a B word, given that I've been quickest on three of them this year. So Chris Meek certainly would like to points for Shakedown, but I think the other drivers acknowledge that you can't win anything by being fastest on Shakedown. What you can do is set yourself up perfectly for a rally, or set yourself up really badly for the rally by throwing it off or crashing it. And Chris has done that in the past, as have many drivers on Shakedown. But there's not really much to gain by going absolutely flat out on a Shakedown, I don't think, unless you're, you know, trying to optimise that setup.
Trev, joking aside, you've done this rally, and you know, we know obviously what co-drivers go through and everything. Is there an element of does the psychological warfare begin? You know, I love all this stuff anyway, and I know you have a bit of a thing for it too. Does it start at Shakedown?
Well, you'd rather be quickest than not, wouldn't you? You're just talking about people maybe not going as fast as they could. Remember, in the older days, it used to be that people would jump start it by 3 or 4 seconds, just to wind a few people up that way. They've obviously canned all of that nowadays, but. Yeah, it's Shakedown for me should always be treated like a Shakedown. Certainly the last time I was in Corsica with Martin Rowe, our Shakedown only lasted probably half an hour or so. It wasn't much at all. Just to get a feeling of the car, make sure there's no vices in it. It's nice and progressive, and then off you go.
Is there an element of, and you know, obviously we've all done various bits and pieces. Certainly when I've done Shakedown, when I've done, you know, BRC and WRC and stuff over the last 10 years, whatever it is, 15, 20 years. I'm one of those who can do a run, and even at my relatively low competitive level, I can go, if I go again now, I'm going to start taking risks. Now I stop. This is the point where I stop. Does that even come into the psyche of the guys at the very top, Trev? Does that even come across their bows that, you know, that they could start taking risks that they don't need to risk?
I don't think it's that. I think it's certainly if things aren't quite right, and I'd imagine, as we saw last year, the Hyundai is going to the Times, don't seem to be on it. There's talk of understeer again, as we heard. I think was fourth, but that's the sort of thing that you'd want to try and dial in. Remember, this time last year, the first stage was 49 kilometres long. Not so bad this time because it's only 17, but it was certainly something that would be more important last year, because the last thing you want to do is go into a 49k stage and not really believe in your setup.
Boys, we're kind of doing things in a slightly odd order here a little bit, but I've already done my predictions for this rally, which we know is going to be absolute total garbage, by the way. Henry Catchpole also did his, and he openly admitted that his will be garbage and Trev's will be spot on. So I'm going to come to you first, Jack Bennion. Dare I bother you so early in this podcast for your predictions for Corsica?
No, you can bother me for anything anytime. So if you want me to give you predictions, I'll give you predictions.
Go on, my friend.
I think, given that we've had a bit of snow and potentially... it's looking like that might subside, but there's a small chance you might get more snow. The weather's been terrible. So it's looking a little bit to me like a Monty. So I'm going to go for Sébastien Ogier for the victory, because I think we're going to potentially have similar conditions. And even if we don't, we know how quick the C3 is on tarmac in Sébastien Ogier's hands. I think Oit Tanak will finish second, and I think Chris Meek will finish third.
Trev, I'm going to ask you. You're good at this. Come on.
I'm going to pick the same three drivers, actually. I'm going to put them in a slightly different order. My heart is going to ruin my head this time because I want Chris Meek to have a brilliant rally, hopefully he's had a fantastic recce. He's going to come into this one. He absolutely loves that car. If he can just keep positive and not let the road position and pollution, as he talks about, in other words, stuff being dragged out onto the road, affect him, and he keeps his head away from that, then I think he can be quite strong in this rally. And if he gets a clean run, he's going to be hard to beat. The toss is between whether it's Tanak or Ogier second. I'm going for Ogier second and Tanak third in this case. But those two could easily be reversed. Ogier, we know, is going to be quick. We know the car was quicker last year. So that's my top three.
So are you going with Chris to win?
Chris to win. I'm going to go Ogier second, Tanak third.
Love it. That's a proper prediction. As my former producer from the old Total Rally days, Jimbo, would say, you've clearly put them on the table there. So love it. No sitting on the fence, completely and utterly all over it. Right, we're going to go. Jack, I want to talk to you about, obviously, your sister publication these days. Obviously, you're Autosport man now.
What about yours?
Say again?
What about your prediction?
You've got to listen to the podcast. It's late
MN
in the podcast.
MN still feels like home, Tony. You can
okay.
crack on.
Okay, thanks, Jack Bennion. I'm a little bit. This story's kind of been bubbling away for quite a few months. Your front page, or rather MN's front page, today, with regards to the tree disease that could threaten Rally GB. What what light can you shed on this one for us, Jack?
Well, I thought you said the 3 degrees.
Excellent. That's
you, Jack, and Ryan to me.
Well, it's been this story has been bubbling under the radar a little bit, Tony, but for 10 years really. It's been spread for a long time, this tree disease. We won't go too much into the sort of specifics of it, but basically if you're not from the UK, all you need to know is there's a tree disease which has been killing trees around the UK for, well, over a decade, but it's specifically been attacking trees in Wales for about 10 years now. And we've got to a point where it's getting quite serious. So the Natural Resource Wales, which is the government body that looks after Welsh forestry land, has started cutting down these trees that are dead, because they're sort of liable to blow over, and that makes the disease easier to pass and stuff like that. So it's all very complicated. But what it means for Rally GB is that there's going to be a lot of felling going on, a lot of trees being cut down, and that could affect the route of Rally GB, because they might not be finished in time for October when the event takes place. And if they are taking heavy machinery and logging, taking trees out of the forest, then that will impact a lot of the routes. So it's
the stages that then get used, I'm sure you've seen them, Jack, as well. Once felling's gone on, and it doesn't almost matter what's gone on, the trucks that drag in and out, the amount of, you know, what was the term that you've just used, Trev, that Chris Meek uses? Pollutant. The amount of pollutant that goes onto the stages, you know, it just becomes a mud bath. You know, it just becomes a mud bath as well.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, really. At that point, at the end of the, in October, if the, you know, either the trucks will still be on the roads, and therefore obviously you can't rally on them if the trucks are still using them, or we'll be at a point where the trucks have just left and obviously churned up the road and caused a lot of problems. Anyone who's competed on national rallies in Wales, like you have, Tony, will know that any time there's been logging going on shortly before an event and it's not been repaired properly, it can make the roads very rutted. It can do a lot of damage to cars, especially sort of two-wheel drive cars and older cars. So it causes a big problem in the UK, logging. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Friend of the show, Jamie Edwards with Rally for Wales, is working hard on helping that situation and doing a lot of work in the Welsh Forest to repair them as best as possible. But this story, I think I take a lot of, to conclude, I think obviously it is a problem and it might affect the route, but I take great solace in the fact that Andrew Keller, who designs this route for Rally GB every year, a bit of an unsung hero, he said that there's a backup plan in place, and if he says there's a backup plan in place, then I trust that Rally GB will be okay.
Yeah, more news from GB. Possibly the worst kept secret in the world, as far as I'm concerned, is the service area is moving to Llandudno.
Yeah, do you want me to carry on with that one?
Yeah, run with it, because I'm going to talk to Trev about this in a second.
Mega, so October last year, I think, was the first time this story kind of broke, was that Llandudno was being looked at as the possible service part for Wales Rally GB. Coastal town, North Wales, northwest Wales, if you like. I guess it's probably North Wales and
the west. It's North Wales. It's proper North Wales, Jack. North Wales, that.
Yeah, it is. So it's obviously a place well known to people in rallying from the fact that we had a street stage there last year, and the Great Orme has been used many times, and it's kind of a sort of spiritual home of rallying in North Wales, really. There's always been the Cambrian event that goes on there, and that event is the first round of the British Rally Championship this year, which used a closed road system for its service park, closed the central street in Llandudno, had all the BRC crews and some of the BTRDA crews as well servicing in the centre and on the promenade. So the plan is to kind of replicate that. We're moving away from D-side, which I don't know, I guess you'll ask Tony and Trevor in a minute what he thinks about it. I'm a bit mixed about this, Tony, to be honest. I think moving away from D-side moves it further away from some of the bigger cities. I understand Llandudno will support this massively, like it always does with rallying, like it did the Cambrian, but I don't know if we're taking this a little bit too far away from sort of the big cities and stuff. Llandudno seems a little bit out of the way to have the main service part, the main part of the event. So I'm not really sure. I'm not criticising the move. I'm just not sure if it is going to be, you know, better for getting people through the door, so to speak, at the service park. But only time will tell on that one.
Yeah. Now, I'm quite mixed on this, because I've used the service park, Trev, in D-side, and also I've used the service park on Llandudno, because I did the opening round it was the opening round of BRC and BTRDA this year, and so I experienced Llandudno being closed and using it as a service park. Trev, what's your take? Because everything that Jack's just said is really valid. And before I give my opinion, just from your point of view, because you've seen and you've, I suppose, from your experience of being a co-driver all around the world, you've experienced all different types of service parks, and sometimes they are useful to get people in, but sometimes they are, and I would almost put D-side into this, so much more functional for the teams and crews.
Yeah, and D-side, you know, the organisers try to get a lot of in fun fairs, that type of thing, to keep people busy and active. So it was an event to go to, even when the rally cars went there. And that worked really well, I thought, at D-side. And as Jack said, it's close to the main population centres of Liverpool and, of course, Manchester. A bit more of a drive out to Clondudnell, but I'm sure there's money involved in it, as there usually is, to get the rally moving in different directions or different bases, and the commercial side of it has to come into it. You've been there, you've seen what it's like with a British Championship rally there. I clearly am going to have to reserve judgment until I go, but and just knowing the organisers and knowing how well they went about the Clondudnell stage last year, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. What do you think?
I'm really conflicted, because if I put my real life business head on, and of course everybody knows where I do, I've worked in WRC for a number of years, getting teams in and out of service parks. D-side was a dream, an absolute dream. And I got some big teams, and I got really, you know, the Japanese team that come over and do it. I normally look after those guys as well. I, you know, everything from a single 20-foot shipping container all the way down to a full-blown, you know, part factory effort and stuff. I've managed to get in and out of service parks, and D-side was really, really easy to deal with. Trying to get heavy equipment into Llandudno, if I'm getting heavy equipment into heavy Llandudno, I'm already scratching my head a little bit on that one. And I can't wait to see how they're going to do it. Now, one little fear I've got, boys, is going back to it was about 2007, 2008. You must have been doing PWRC around then, Trev.
No, I finished in 2000.
Right. Okay. I was looking at, I had three teams in PWRC. I had Toshi Arai, Fumo Notohara, and I think Stuart Jones, it might have been. Anyway, by the by, it was when the servicing is in Cardiff.
Yep.
And we had three service areas. It was really fragmented. Mm-hmm. And that's my fear, that is this going to be a really fragmented service area? And it suddenly becomes quite disjointed. And I'm holding judgment. I'm not going to judge anything until I see the service part plan. You know, putting my other hat on as a competitor, D-side was great, because I could, when I've done GB, I've gone home overnight, to be perfectly honest with you, which saves on hotel costs, being really, really selfish. Obviously, we probably wouldn't do that with Llandudno if we're lucky enough to do it this year. I think they will lose some, I think they'll lose the casual fan going to Llandudno. I think there was a lot of people, certainly from my home city, that just jumped in the car, and it was, you know, 30 minutes to go and see a WR, you know, in their mind, they were going to an event. They were going to a WRC event. They weren't actually going out on the stages, but they were going there. They go into the service park and stuff like that. Will they try and do that for Llandudno? Not so sure. What's the road system going to be like, trying to get in all those, you know, potential casual fans? Again, I'm really, really not sure. And I think that's going to be an interesting management that the guys behind it are going to have, is managing the amount of traffic in and out from the fans, and obviously the rally cars, and Hyundai bringing effectively their own buildings and trying to, you know, I don't know whether they're going to knock down half a land or not just for Hyundai, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. And I feel like I'm really sitting on the fence, but I've got a different opinion for different parts of my life, being honest with you, boys. So there you go. I guess we'll see. Listen, boys, before we wrap up this section of the program, because believe it or not, we're running headlong. We've been going 25 minutes. A bit later in the podcast, Henry Cashpole and I were talking about, and we put it out on the Twitter as well, we were talking about rally cars perhaps we shouldn't like but liked. And it all stemmed from Henry's nod of appreciation towards the SX4 Suzuki, which I called effectively a rally car only a mother could love. And perhaps he was looking at it through beer goggles. Jack Bengen, some call them a 10-2 bird as well, but not me, because I'm not sexist. with regards to rally cars you shouldn't like but do like, have you got one?
I guess it's quite a difficult one because it depends on the opinion of other people, doesn't it, really? But I guess the one that always springs to mind for me is the Escort RS 1700T.
Oh.
I don't know if that's a car people like, but I choose that one because it wasn't particularly good. or it wasn't as good as it probably should have been. And following on from the Mark 1 and the Mark 2 Escorts, obviously dominated rallying in the periods that they were in and very famous, won lots of world championships and various national championships as well. But the RS 1700T didn't quite crack. Well, it didn't really get a chance, in fairness, but didn't quite perform in the same way as the Escort. So I don't know. It's a car I just something about the way it looks. It's not the best looking car in the world, but it's just one of those cars that I'm kind of weirdly attracted to, and it's got a good story behind it. So yeah, I'd say maybe I'll get crucified for this because it's actually a car people like, but I'd imagine it's a car that, because it wasn't particularly successful and sort of missed its boat a little bit, that it'll be one that people don't really think of very often. But yeah, that'll probably be my choice.
Bit of a story, very, 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 very quickly about the RS1700T. There used to be a guy called Ian Harwood who did road rallies and stuff, and he did the old Motoring News Championship, stuff like that. And he used to have a company in Ellesmere Port called Ian Harwood Competition Cars and Equipment. And there will be some of our listeners that will remember that. And he used to have stickers, big square stickers, half the size of an A4, with a picture of a 1700T on, with his name at Competition Cars and Equipment. And the phone number was, and I can still remember it, 339-2801. And I had that on my bedroom door from about the age of 12. And many years later, when I built an Escort and then got to know Ian a little bit, he always used to joke, because every kind of boy racer back in the day who had a Mark II always had an Ian Harwood sticker on. Most of them had never actually bought anything from Ian, but he always insisted that they added 10 horsepower to your car. True story, bless him. And I don't know where Ian is these days, because he sold the business out. It's now relocated to, it's called GNS Escorts now in Widnes, but I don't know. I hope Ian's still with us. Another very quick story about Ian. He used to do road rallies, and this is long before we had fancy harnesses and roll cages and stuff. And he was, I think it was a Motoring News round, and the seatbelt broke on his co-driver, and he tied his co-driver in with the tow rope. True story. And, yeah, so his co-driver was actually tied into the passenger seat with the tow rope that he was carrying in the car.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Anyway, Trev, you're not so guilty or guilty pleasure, perhaps.
I think a Mercedes-Benz 450 SLC, the one that they used in safaris and some of their up rallies, it was a massive thing, 4.5 litre, something like 230 brake horsepower. You had Mikula and people like that driving, Andrew Kahn, and it was hugely successful in its day. But imagine Mercedes rallying nowadays, that would be a bit mad, wouldn't it?
Is that the one that Bjorn Vaildegaard told them to forget it in the end? Or am I imagining that? Was that the one that, I'm sure it was Bjorn Vaildegaard or someone like who drove it, who kind of went, nah, don't bother. Some story like that. I'm sure someone will put me straight on that.
I think it had an automatic box, didn't it, Trev?
It did, yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, which is pretty mental, isn't it?
Why wouldn't it have an auto box?
So,
you know those cars are still running as taxis somewhere, don't you, Trev?
Yeah, Vaildegaard actually won in a 500, I think it was, but that was in South America, maybe. It's one of those things in the back of my head, I can't remember. Ryan's your man for that.
Yeah, well, funny enough, Ryan's coming up. Boys, that's it for this section of the show. You boys are off now to go and do what you think. Your thing, Trev's teaching people how to sell Porsches, Jack's being an Autosport TV star, and I'm producing a podcast. That's how different it is, but there you go. Boys, we're going to have a couple of weeks off, so we're going to obviously miss the results of Corsica, but I will bring you back on the first episode of season 16 to basically ridicule your predictions, because we'll never get them right. We'll never get them right. Although, Trev, you're pretty good, aren't you? Do you know what? I've just realised I'm contradicting me. Trev is pretty good with these. Okay, all right. Well, I actually hope Trev's right on this one anyway. Jack, have a nice couple of weeks off, even though I think you've pretty much been a fleeting co-host this particular season, but hopefully we'll get you back a bit more next season now you've settled into your new high-powered role.
Yeah, I need to pull my finger out and do a better job next year. And before we go, as always, at the end of every season, big thanks for Tony Simpson for all the hard work you put into putting the podcast together and the editing team behind it as well. So, yeah, thanks very much. It's always a joy to come on and chat rallying with you guys.
Oh, you make people giddy when you do that, Jack. Go on, Trev.
I do want to echo that as well, because if this is the 15th season, that means it's like 150 episodes, and that's just absolute rally. That's not counting what went before. And to have the discipline to do it most weeks is fair play. You know, there's very few other people who have done that. A complete rally nut and fan and driver, and keep it going there.
More seasons than Friends now. We're going to get cancelled by the network, dude.
Yeah, but Channel 5 will pick us up, mate. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And then Spike.
Rally one.
Yeah, brilliant.
Other channels are available.
Of course they are. Boys, thank you so, so much. Folks, we'll be back after this break with Ryan Champion and Chris Ingram.
This is Absolute Rally. Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Thanks to Trev and Jack at the top of the programme there, and Ryan Champion's finally bothered to turn up now. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Well, if you'd invited me earlier, I'd have turned up earlier.
Well, technically, if you look at the text messages, I've just had a look and you've missed it. We'll talk about that later because we've actually got a guest now. Chris Ingram, you're not being with us for ages, mate. Hello.
You've been skiving.
I was going to say you were going to do that. I won't say what you've been doing. You've been working very hard, my friend. You've been very hard to get back into ERC. And you ran what we call a plain livery. It's fair to say you had some little bits of pieces of support, but a tough job to get out on as us.
Yeah, definitely. Had a pretty much last minute blow on the sponsorship front, which was out of my control, really. So, massively thanks to TalkSport and Michelin, I was able to still do it. But, yeah, plain livery looked pretty cool, actually. Factory fresh, as Ryan would say.
and it's quite ironic because you were working hard with sponsorship and you had loads of iconic liveries lined up as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I had some... Because I do most of the work myself. I do all the liveries and, you know, to try and tease people into backing me. And when I was over in Sweden with Ryan recently, we were coming up with some mega ideas, but I just hope one of them pulls off now.
I mean, obviously you've got something to work with now. It was far from a straightforward rally for you. Tell us, firstly, before we go into your rally, just we see some amazing images from the Azores, from the helicopter shots, from the photographs, whatever. Tell us a little bit about the nature of the rally and the stages.
Yeah, it is as good as it looks on the coverage, especially the volcano stage. Basically, all the stages are so different. Where the rally starts, in the middle of the island, it's quite basic, sort of a farmland area, and the roads are still tricky, quite soft. Then day two, you're more on the side of where the big volcano is on the island to the west, which is just, for me, it's the best stage in the world. Massive drops. There's a bit of everything in the stage, a bit of really slow, twisty stuff between the banks. There's flat out bits over the tops where they film with the helicopter. There's a bit of everything. It's the most challenging stage you could ever do, I think. And then the last day is to the east of the island, which is like a jungle. It's like Jurassic Park. So there's a bit of everything. It's an incredible rally.
Now, it was a pretty crazy weekend in terms of results, in terms of weather. How did it all start for you, and where did it go from there?
Qualifying was really good. I'm usually slow on quality, but we were third, 0.6 of a second behind Lucky Nook, which we were really pleased with. So it was a good start, but then I went for the wrong mindset altogether, really. I felt like I've got to win this. I've got to do really well, otherwise I'm going to struggle to get support after this. So I put too much pressure on myself to try and win. And considering I've not driven the car for almost 6 months, it wasn't the best idea, really. And early on in the first stage, I was pushing flat out, and we had a big moment and clipped a curb on the tarmac section and dropped a bit of time. So it was difficult from the start mentally. And then on day two, on the volcano stage, I always pushed myself to the limit on there. And on the split in the middle of the stage, I think we were pretty much on Lucky Nook's pace. And we were about 20 seconds ahead of everyone else. So that would have put me back up to second, not far behind Lucky Nook. But then I spun at the end of the stage and lost 35 seconds trying to restart the car. So that was a massive, you know, once that happens in a rally, there's no, you know, you can't win after that when it's at that pace. But then on the fight, so we kept going. It was really difficult. We dropped to sixth after that. And then on the last day, the weather completely changed. It was horrific conditions, probably the worst conditions I've ever driven in. But we didn't realise it would be that bad. So we knew everyone would be going on the soft tyre, and we opted to go on the hard tyre because we had nothing to lose, really. But we did have something to lose. But we thought, you know, if it is dry where the stages are, that could be our big chance to climb back up. But yeah, it wasn't the right choice, but we still managed to climb up at the end due to other people falling off the road, really.
And they did that pretty spectacularly. I mean, you mentioned Lucky Nook, and he obviously had a puncture, and then he crashed out on the first corner of the last stage.
Yeah, that was crazy bad luck. I think it was his brake. The puncture rubbed his brake line or something. But there's always drama on that last stage, and we were just going to keep pacing, and I had a feeling that something would go wrong up at the front. But in the end, we were only 40 seconds behind the leader, and considering we had two punches, two spins where I stalled the car, and a rubbish tyre choice by me, hopefully it's just all going to come together sometime.
So a pretty crazy rally all round, and a surprise winner, really, in the end.
Yeah, definitely. Lukasz Habaj from Poland. It was his first win. So for the championship, it looks really good, because Ricardo Mora, who was second, he won't be carrying on. And, you know, I think that Habaj had the rally of his life, really. So I'd like to think we're in a really strong position if we can get a good result, if we can get to Gran Canaria.
And what are the chances? I mean, obviously, you said you've got good support from TalkSport, you've got Michelin on board, but ultimately you need some backing. So, you know, just how likely is it you can get to Gran Canaria?
I'm working flat out now. I've probably got 2 weeks before I need to tell TalkSport if I can find my side of the budget. So I just need something to come off desperately, to be honest. But I'm working every day flat out to try and make it happen.
Well, I did see on social media you're looking for a new seat. So if you're looking for a new seat, you must be expecting to drive.
I know, but no, I'm honestly, I'm no way near at the moment. But if I do get the chance, I want to be ready this time, because I didn't feel like I was prepared enough, because I've been just so busy trying to find sponsors recently. I felt like Azores was, even though the result in the end was really good, I felt like it was a bit of a, we could have taken more advantage of it if we were in a different situation, to be honest.
Chris, I know how hard you are on yourself, and, you know, there's lots of ifs and buts and whens and whys. You know, I think even if you still had the support, and this is just my opinion, and by all means put me straight on this, even if you would have had the support what you had last year, if you would have took a podium on this event, wouldn't you, mate? You would have took a podium on this event, surely.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about how am I going to carry on rallying at the moment, whereas last year I was thinking, I've got the whole year lined up.
Yeah.
I can focus on improving. So it's a much different place, really.
Do you think you know, obviously you had that looks really last year, and you know, we always talk about, I suppose, you know, I think Chris Meek was probably one of the people who springs to mind with this, who, when he needed to get results, he kind of pulled stuff out the bag as well. So maybe that's where the inspiration moving forward can come from for you as well, you know, that back against the wall type thing, where, you know, whether it is running a plain livery or whatever it may be, you know, focusing it and kind of maybe not taking the situation for granted.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think it's going to make me a much stronger driver when I do pull some more funding out of the bag, and I'm never going to give up on that. So I think everything comes for a reason, doesn't it? And it's making me more experienced in every way for when I get the chance again. I'm going to make the most of it.
Good for you. Chris, you know, genuinely, we have people from all over the world who do listen to the podcast and download and everything else, and in various, you know, various things. What's the best way of getting hold of you, Chris, if people want to get involved?
Any social media, email, website, whatever, I'm easy to get hold of.
Are you on social media, Chris, are you? I haven't seen you on
Tinder.
Social media.
Yeah,
I'm on Tinder.
We heard it was Grindr. Anyway, right. Yeah. But listen, folks, if you can help Chris, and I'm sure there'll be various packages and everything else, but Chris will talk to you, and you will be talking to the man himself, as opposed to going through various managements and things like that. If you reach out to Chris will talk to you, won't you, Chris?
100%.
Happy days.
Without a doubt.
Listen, I know you've got to be somewhere, so I won't keep you now, Chris. Chris, thanks so much for your time, mate. Stay in touch with us, okay?
Thanks a lot, guys.
Happy
Cheers,
days.
Chris.
Folks,
Cheers,
we will be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid left crest, 8-6 right minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, right and 5-6 on left crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Thanks to Chris Ingram for dropping into us. As I say, if you want to see whether you can get involved with Chris is desperately trying to continue his ERC season. Seek him out. He isn't difficult to find. He's our Chris. He's a cracking lad, and I wish him the best of luck for the rest of the season. We will be checking in with him. Right. So a couple of bits and pieces, a little bit of admin, first and foremost. The guys, of course, at Kielder and Dan We The Terrors, we had these mugs, and obviously we did the competition in season 14. Season 15, we tried to do something different, and we decided to help charities, and it turned out to be charities all over the world. And we got people to make a donation to charity, send us a screen grab, and send it in to us. And we had a fair amount, and I did a bit of a totaliser in two charity form today, and we raised somewhere in the region of £250, give or take, with rates of exchange and things like that, because we had it in euros, we had it in dollars. And actually, no, do you know what? I've just realised it was actually £450. And the reason why it was £450, because we had one donation, Ryan Champion, seriously, we had one guy who actually did a $250 charity donation for a mug.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yep.
So thank you very much to them.
To that alone, a guy called, I'm going to give him Jason Anthony. He, $250, an amazing amount of money just to get one of our mugs, but also obviously to support a charity. So I hadn't even factored his in, because I'd moved his to one side purposely to mention it. So adding that to the other 250 that we put together. So £450, thanks to Kielder to allow us to do that. And you guys, obviously, for wanting the mugs as well. Thank you so much for that. Now, we kind of got a little bit sidetracked, Ryan Champion, with this whole iconic livery that never was. In fact, I think people just kind of took it and run with it and decided to do what they wanted. So I put out on our Twitter feed, I'm sure you'll be able to pick it up now, because I put it out as we started recording this, the winners. There's four images. Dave Welford with a Rover SD1. Not for delivery, Dave. No, that's not why you're winning a copy of the game. Not for the livery, which may sound odd considering it was a livery competition. It was the fact that you bothered to draw in pencil a Rover SD1. And actually, there was a serious amount of effort to draw that Rover Ryan Champion. So I think he deserves a copy of the game.
Yeah, no, there was a 2018 SD1 Rover Vitesse. I mean, you know, epic.
Yeah. Why wouldn't we give him a copy of the game? So we will be dropping you a line, and you've got a copy of the game. Tom Lord did a very conventional Evo one, and it wasn't that far removed, I suppose, right? Because he used the Rothmans livery, and of course, I remember. Did I dream of Rothmans livery on the very early Mitsubishi Evo?
No, Evo 3 ran in New Zealand. It ran in that Rothmans livery, and actually that like you said, maybe quite conventional, but that car does look fantastic in that livery. So that was good. Well done.
Now, speaking of the very first one we got in was from Fast Eddie, as he goes on Twitter. Eddie C, who emailed in the Fiesta with the Michelin Pilot livery on, 2017, yeah. Fiesta World Car. It did look stunning. I don't know whether they call it popping, don't they, with these liveries, and the blue really popped. I thought it looked absolutely stunning.
Popping. Yay. Check you.
Yeah.
Tell you off from Liverpool. You're down with it, aren't you? And obviously that was very much a Malcolm Wilson livery, Malcolm Wilson Motorsport livery, and putting that on M Sport car, like you said, looked great.
Now, the last one, which may confuse some people if you've actually checked out the images on Twitter, and again, we've kind of took a little bit of a creative line with this one, where Run Amok Rally, who emailed in, a Mark II Golf GTI, which wasn't particularly an iconic livery. I'm not convinced he kind of got what we were trying to do, but the fact he sent in an image that he created on Fosa, for some reason, I'm probably not even allowed to mention that because it's a rival game, but he managed to mock up this Golf. But he's also got a Golf himself, and he sent us a picture of him crashing it in snow. So the fact he sent us a picture of the fact he crashed it in a snowbank, we thought it deserved a copy of the game, right?
On a rally.
Yeah. Not just randomly went out and just found a snowbank and thought, yeah. So he's over in Canada. Apparently, they've got loads of snow and they're desperate for WRC. So the guys at Run Amok Rally, you will also get a copy of the fantastic Dirt 2.0.
But the special mention should go to Bertie Redfern for his Mr. Tomkinson's carpets Lancia Delta S4, because, yeah, it's fair to say that livery never existed. You know, that was some creativity there.
It was some creativity. And I tell you what, Bertie, email studio at absoluterally.co.uk, right, and let's see what we can find for you for that one. Because you didn't email in. I stipulated very much email in, and you didn't. You tweeted us, to be fair. And that's why you didn't really go into this. But in fairness to Rise Right, we should try and work something out for you. So do us a favor, send me an email and let me know what format you would ideally want. Let's see what we can work out for you. Okay. So there you go. That's our general admin for the end of season of Absolute Rally season 15. Apparently, by the way, Ryan Champion, Trevor Agnew just pointed out to us at the top of the program, if we're on season 15, this should be, give or take, bar in mind some specials, our 150th episode.
Wow. And if anybody's just started listening this episode, that's a lot to catch up on.
Well, in fairness, as I say, well, I think we spoke to somebody the other week who's came to the party late, who we both know in different worlds, but Richard Clues, who is the man behind ITG air filters. You may notice him rallying a very, very special B13 Subaru in the National Tarmac Championship. Been around rallying for many, many years. ITG is a fantastic brand. And he's just started listening. So welcome to the party, Richard. And we'll be doing something with Richard in season 16 as well. So there you go. Right. A couple of bits and pieces of any other business. Oh, by the way, before I go any further, I'd completely forgot Ryan Champion. It's Corsica this weekend. I need to get your predictions from it. But Corsica, just to tie in with the whole Dirt thing, by the way, 2.0, of course, is that Phil Mills is the co-driver on Dirt 2.0. He's one of them. And, of course, he did Corsica with Elvin last year.
He did, yeah. Talk about in at the deep end. Do you remember in at the deep end? That with Chris Searle sitting in with Roger Clark. But, I mean, you know, for Phil to sit in last year with Elvin was incredible. You know, what was it, 10 years or something out of the WRC? And, I think Phil won't mind us saying, you know, he's probably put on at least 2 pounds since he was co-driving regularly. And to jump into the hardest rally of the year and, you know, to get Alvin round to a solid result, that was a brilliant, brilliant effort. And he reads the pace notes in Dirt Rally and he also wrote them as well.
There you go. Right, before we move away from Corsica Ryan Champion, we've all done our predictions. Can I have yours, please?
I think this could be a good pointer towards the championship this year, because I think it's a big rally for Oit Tanak. The easy prediction would be that Sebastian Ogier is going to win the rally. But I think if Tanak can beat Ogier here, then he'll go on to win the championship. And so for that reason, I'm going to stick my neck out on Oit Tanak beating Sebastian Ogier into second place. And if Oit wins, I think he's going to drag his teammate onto the podium and Chris Meek for third.
Okay, do you want me to tell you what everybody else is, including Henry's with?
Go.
Okay, Jack Benyon was Ogier, Tanak, Meek.
Oh.
Trevor Agnew was Meek, Ogier, Tanak.
Right.
Henry Catchpole's was Nouvelle, Loeb, Meek.
Right.
Tony Simpson's, who's he? Ogier, Loeb, Tanak.
Okay.
There you go. So I thought I should share them with you anyway.
There's a little bit more consistency there than normal.
There is, but let's be honest, as Henry says, whatever we say, they'll all be completely and utterly wrong anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yari Matty for the win then.
I'll do a very, very quick any other business, and I haven't looked at this statistically, and I'm sure the guys who do the stats who follow our programme will put me straight on this, but Corsican, I've just been looking at the Rally Corsica entry list. I've roughly worked out there's around 32 to 33 R2 cars on that rally, Ryan Champion.
R2 cars?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I can't remember, and I'm sure there must be somewhere, but I don't remember seeing that many R2 cars on an entry list.
No, I mean, obviously, very popular car in France in the French Championship, isn't it? So, no, wow, well, that's going to be some fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whoever wins R2 is going to be pedalling hard.
Absolutely, absolutely. So before we go, you said you've got any other business you'd like to get?
Yeah.
We haven't really done any. Nobody else has done any other business, so you are quite privileged this week.
Yeah, but mine's sort of staying on theme, so it fits quite nicely with Corsica, and as I like to, when we get to a WRC event, I sort of have a bit of a look back at what's happened in the past, and Didi Auriol has always been the dominant man in Corsica. He's had the most wins, the most podiums, the most stage wins, etc., and it was always dominated by French drivers initially, but it's not unheard of for the foreign drivers to win there. So if you think about Marco Alem, took two wins in the 037. Ironically, it was a love-hate relationship Colin McRae had with it. Colin had some nasty accidents in Corsica, but he did win there twice. Thierry Neuville's won there twice as well. Who can forget Petter Solberg's win there in 2003 when he crashed on the shakedown? The Pro Drive team worked all night, got the car repaired, he went out, won the rally, and also Marco Martin as well took a victory there. So, you know, it does see overseas winners, maybe slightly unexpected winners, you'd say, for French tarmac. But coming to my point, really, any other business, Corsica, is it going to be in the championship going forward? It's a big question mark again now. We're looking at more overseas rallies, more long-haul rallies on the calendar, and that puts the likes of Corsica under pressure. Now, it's a very much a traditional round of the WRC. We saw it drop out and go to IRC for a while. What do you think, Tony? Corsica in or out going forward?
From the purest point of view, and having been there, it has to be in. The reality, it's going to be out.
Yeah, and I think I probably feel the same. You know, it's obviously a second French round. I know people say, well, Monte Carlo's not French, but all the stages are in France, so it is a second French round. But like you say, it is a real iconic round of WRC. I know we use that phrase maybe, or that word, a bit too often, but it is. You know, you just go back through the Group A days, through the Group B days, back to Group 4 and the Stratoses, and you know, that spectacular BMW M1, was it Bernard Begouin? I remember him trying to thread that round Corsica as well. There's so many iconic images from Corsica, and it just has such history in the championship. So it would be a sad loss if it does go from the championship. But if we're going to see Kenny back in, if we're going to see Japan back in, obviously with Chile as well, then unfortunately it looks like it may be under threat.
Yeah, Yeah, unfortunately, because as I say, it's one of the, I haven't been to all the rounds, but it's one of the few rounds I've actually went to and managed to allow to spend some bit of time there rather than just work. And it was just a fantastic experience. But there you go. Listen, one last thing, right, before I let you go, because we are really pushed for time. Everybody else has done this thing with regards to what we did with Henry at the end of the podcast, and it kind of stemmed from a conversation that you and he had on Twitter. Rally car you like, but you really shouldn't.
Well, I kind of touched on this, didn't I, a couple of weeks ago in Any Other Business when we said we'd get Henry back on. And I'll probably stick to the one I mentioned there, the Nissan Sunny GTIR. I thought with the wheel fans on, with the spotlights that they ran all the time, because it had terrible cooling, so it improved the cooling package apparently if they ran the lamp pod on the front. But I thought that in the red, right, and blue factory colours, Stig Blomqvist driving, wheel fans, it was never a winner. It was never that close to being a winner. I just thought it sounded fairly cool and it looked pretty cool.
There you go. And it was cool because of the fans. There you go. That's it. Brian Champ, you've got 2 weeks off now.
Right, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, so,
Feel,
you've got nothing else to do. You know, you can sit there and you can play Dirt 2.0 all you like.
I wish. And as you know, with having a small family, that is far easier said than done.
Yeah. I think I've managed to get in total an hour on it since it came out.
Yeah, funny, since it's come out, I've had a significantly less time on it than before it came out, strangely enough.
Yeah, I can imagine. Anyway, folks, we're going to have a little break. And as I say, this is something we've been talking about, which Henry and I dissect, and we delve into Twitter as well, because where we put a bit of a thing out on Twitter about it, with rally cars we really shouldn't like, is up after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. It's something... it's something we've been dicing with and talking about for a great period of time, albeit probably via Twitter. Ryan Champion loves to chip in on these things. And it's rally cars that perhaps we shouldn't like, but we do like. And it came about, the Gravel Crew put stuff out on their Facebook page, Jamie Arkle, who's great. But also Henry Catchpole got involved as well with Ryan. There was some back and forth, and Ryan and I said, we should probably get Henry on. So here's Henry. Henry Catchpole, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's very kind of you. It's nice to be back.
It's brilliant to have you back. Now, I put something out on Twitter earlier today, just because you were coming on, to kind of freshen this up again, to kind of revisit it, I suppose. And you've been a busy boy, so you haven't seen your Twitter feed. But where did the inspiration come from? What car was it that you put out there? If memory serves, it was the SX4.
It was. So it was actually Ryan put it out there, because it was on the trophy, I think, for
the Colin McRae trophy.
For the Collins Crest longest jump. And Chris Meek won that trophy. And on it, of all the cars to put on it, was an SX4. And I popped up with saying I actually quite liked that car, because it was sort of deemed as one of the cars that nobody ever really liked and looked very awkward. And I just actually did quite like it. So that's where it came from.
From a footballing point of view, and we should probably not make football terms in our podcast because we are international, and this may not. To me, it was the Peter Crouch of WRC cars.
Well, as a tall, skinny man, I sort of, I don't know what you're talking about there. So.
I was fortunate unfortunate, because I was working with the Suzuki program that year that they came into WRC, so I was kind of around it quite a bit. And I think I did actually put on Twitter when you put that out, it was a face that only a mother could love. And I still stand by that. It has to be said. I still stand by that.
Well, it was around that time, I think it was actually that year, that I was doing the BRC and the Swift Sport Cup. So I was sort of, perhaps I was, swayed by being in a Suzuki at the time. But there was something about it. It was quite chunky and sort of big arches. There's almost, if you look at the sort of silhouette of it, it's this, and you look at the Yaris, the same sort of kind of something about it.
That's without any clear bonnet. But that's beer goggles. I'm sorry. That's beer goggles, Henry. We've all been guilty of that. That's a massive stretch to go from a Suzuki SX4 to a 2017 Yaris. Now, I was quite hard on the Yaris originally. I did say something along the lines of it looked like an ironing board on the back of a hatchback. the spoiler. But now it has morphed into something, and I'm not just saying this because of results, into something probably a little bit special. But I wanted to run some of our listeners' ones past you to see what your take was on it as well.
Okay, yeah.
So, and I've got a little bit of a soft spot for some of these. The Octavia WRC.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that. It was,
Now, I don't know whether you were around the guys. It was a Pro Speed who actually bought all those cars originally off Skoda. A good friend of mine was working with them at the time. And apparently, I think I've told this story before, that the way Skoda Motorsport was set up at the time, they were all built in kind of separate sheds or separate garages, if you like, outbuildings, and they were all slightly different in their own little way. Yeah, there was no kind of rhyme or reason. They had their own little personalities, and they're all very, very, very much the same, but very different at the same time. I kind of see the Octavia.
Yeah, because the Fabia was obviously a really good looking rally car.
Allegedly, and you talk about silhouettes, allegedly a 206 was purchased, allegedly. And
really?
there was a lot picked up from the 206 for the Fabia.
Yeah, I can see that. So short wheelbase. Yeah. Makes sense.
Now, the Octavia Stablemate, which is one which is kind of forgot about, I think somebody put some pictures out of one the other day. The Cordoba WRC.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there we go. There's something about a saloon car as a rally car that sort of quite appealing, and whether it's because of Subarus and Mitsubishis that you sort of then kind of look at anything later that came as a saloon car that then makes it, you hark back to one of those perhaps, or that's it.
Because obviously we all know obviously the VAG group and everything else, and it was kind of a bizarre time at the time. You know, they were kind of they allowed brands to fight one another, which very quickly they kind of stop that very quickly, really. But the Octavia I liked in gravel spec, and the Cordoba I liked in tarmac spec. So it was almost like they should have just kind of kept them both going. Just have one for tarmac and one for gravel, really. That was
kind
of
quite good.
Maybe that would have been perhaps the future. And do you know what? By the way, I should give probably props to the guys who've sent these. That was from Lewis Moore. Thanks so much for sending that in. Sam Tickle, who's listened to us for quite some time. At world level, this is kind of his guilty pleasure. Cars you shouldn't like, as we say. The Fiat Punto Super 2000.
Ooh.
It was the Arbath Super 2000, because to be fair, they dropped the Fiat name for the rally program.
Yes, and it was, that was cool because Kimi Raikkonen drove one, didn't he? He drove one of those before he drove for Citroën, didn't he? So that's instantly cool.
But I remember before that, when IRC was at its peak, and again, I worked in IRC a little bit, Gian Domenico Basso was the boy in one of those machines.
Easy for you to say.
I know. I'm so glad I got that out. I've got history, Henry. You will well know this. I've got history. So don't ask me to say it again. I've been building up to that, by the way, for the last 3 days. But it was before the Peugeot started to dominate. Very early days of IRC. I'm sure you remember this. Arbath was the brand.
Yes.
They were kind of ahead of the curve. Now, somebody said this, and I said this to Tom Cave on last week's program. Somebody said to me that a lot of the Arbath guys now are a Hyundai. And that's one of the reasons why there's so many Hyundai R5s in Italy.
How true that is, I really don't know.
I don't know. But the next two you will find surprising from Sam as a kind of guilty pleasure. Toyota Celica GT4, never.
Exactly, that's not a guilty pleasure. Funnily enough, your competition that you're running to put liveries on other cars, I thought Castrol on the current WRC Yaris, that's got to look good. I don't have the skills to render that, but I thought that would look good.
Neither have we, which is why we've asked people to send them in to us. And we've actually had quite a few in, so they will have been announced by now, Henry. Pull away the smoke and mirrors. Now, here's one that upset Ryan Champion pretty much within 30 seconds of it being tweeted earlier today as we record this. Puma Kit Car.
Oh, I did see that. I mean, that's a great looking car. That's not a guilty pleasure, surely.
I'll say this because Ryan's not with us at the moment, but the colour scheme that Ryan had when he drove and the one that he is probably going to restore, I didn't like the Borum colour scheme. I loved the one that they used in Formula Rally, which was the rapid fit one, which Martin Rowe and Patrick Mago drove. I really like that blue and yellow. There was something about that blue and yellow Puma.
Where sort of the Michelin sort of overtones perhaps of something like that.
It just popped, you know, to talk from a livery point of view, as Mark Lively, who does my livery, says, it's got to pop. And it did pop for me, that one. Now, Ben Tristan's messaged in, and he's messaging to me, these fall very much into the SX4 category. If this was a Venn diagram, these would be very much in the SX4 circle, shall we say.
Okay.
Hyundai Accent WRC.
Yeah, I can't really quite get on board with that. So I understand why that's in that category. Yep.
That was, and the Peugeot 307 CC.
Oh, somebody had to mention it, didn't they? Surely that's the car that nobody could love. Certainly not Marcus Grönholm.
Marcus Grönholm didn't like it, and neither does co-driver, because we all know what happened when up through his seat.
Yes. But it's such a weird car to turn into. I mean, yes, I suppose you can see it, but because I can't help but look at that and think of it with a folding hardtop, it just seems totally wrong from the get-go.
Do you know, from your experience, and you'd know much more about this than me, is something happened there in marketing where they went, we really need to push the 307 because it's not selling? Oh, I know. We'll use it for our motorsport program.
Jeepers, but I mean, you're not really appealing to the sort of, I don't think they can have done it.
There's only so many hairdressers that watch WRC.
If you're talking Venn diagrams, I'd have thought, yes, the customer base for 307cc and WRC are not really overlapping very much.
And that's kind of where I got to with it as well. And again, we've gone backwards and forwards in time here, and what I love is that the people, and Antti, who tweets the program quite a bit as well, he's pulled something from the, dare I say, the Rally Dark Ages almost. That kind of that era of just after Group B, where Group A was a little bit sparse, should we say, with the Audi Coupe Quattro, the non-turbo version.
Oh, yes, that's, yeah, I'm, and then you just didn't, after Group B, that, no.
There was a very kind of tiny time, a kind of window of time between before, you know, I suppose Mazda was there and stuff, but before kind of, you know, the legacy kind of took hold and the Evos kind of took hold. There was this kind of period of time where everyone, it felt, was scratching their heads a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. Which, that's certainly one to champion, isn't it? That's not a usual choice.
I can't imagine many people. You've got to be an enthusiast to like that particular car. Now,
yes,
this brings me to this list. And again, the rally analyst always sends us bits and pieces. God bless. Thanks for messaging this one into us. He sends us a list. Ashamed to say, all of the below. Now, I'm slightly surprised by the first one, but we'll go through it in order. The Arbarth 124 GT.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, I mean, that's a historic car, isn't it? That's, I've got that right. That's not the more up to date version of MX5.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Perhaps we need clarification on that.
Because we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
The Daihatsu event. What was the one who did the Daihatsu? Oh, what was the one?
Oh,
did the
one, I know the one. Yes, I know the one you mean.
Or whatever it is, yeah. Anyway, apparently, like those, they were four-wheel drive, 900 horsepower.
Well, that's reason to like them, isn't it, really?
I meant to say CC, but horsepower sounded much more impressive, didn't it, really? I thought, shall I correct this and see whether anyone notices? But I thought, no, because...
I was just thinking, 900 brake horsepower?
Yeah.
We're in rallycross terms here.
Yeah, absolutely. The Lada Riva.
Yes, now that was on my list.
Really?
Yeah, I put that down because it was the Lada rally cars almost in general. The sort of, is it VFTS? I did look it up, which is Vilnius Car Repair Factory or something like that. Wasn't it? The 2105 Group B ones. They look cool. I like those. So I'm with them on that. They were definitely ones that you probably shouldn't like, but certainly do.
Well, they were basically a Fiat body shell, weren't they?
Yeah, that's what it reminds you of.
A strange little vehicle, and one which a very good friend of mine's dad, who was very successful, Sam Hughes, from North Wales, who you may remember in a screaming Super 1600 Clio and BRC probably 10 or 15 years ago, probably more. But his dad was one of the factory supported drivers, memory serves. They don't get me wrong, they wouldn't be my first choice as a rally car. And again, probably similar it's a bit niche, I think is probably the best way of putting it.
Yes, yeah.
I'm sure there's specialist websites for people who like them. Now the next one I'm kind of conflicted on, because this it's the Proton Satria.
Right.
Now, I don't know whether it's the Proton Satria of Super 1600 days, the A6 car, or whether we're talking the Super 2 car. I equally like them both. I do like that canary yellow, and I think they have to be canary yellow as well.
Yeah. It's a bit like the sort of the MGs had to be that green and grey colour scheme. That was sort of another car that I happen to like. But yes, no, I'm with you with that, because particularly I think the Super 2000 ones were very cool.
I was very, very privileged. I was lucky enough to drive one on a test. Very early doors before they got released to do IRC and SWRC, the Super 2000 Championship and stuff like that. I work with Proton and Mellors Elliott. And I went to a test and I was very lucky enough to drive one around Blighton, which was just bizarre because I didn't go there expecting to drive it. And I was just, right, it's your turn. Now I was like, my turn for what? I was like, and I had to make out that I was very cool and completely knew what was going on, but really I didn't. I was completely giddy, and still to this day it makes me giddy even thinking about it. Saab 96.
Yes, now I knew somebody mentioned Saabs. I can't quite see them as rally. It just something doesn't work for me on that.
I'm kind of the same as you. I never got into the whole Saab marketing thing where they try to make out they were aeroplanes. And I understand the heritage, but all the adverts basically made it look like a fighter jet, and I just couldn't get into it. I think there's that. Now, the next one is a car that I've actually owned, so I've got to be really careful here. Skoda Felicia.
Well, I should be careful what I say then, given you've owned one.
I owned one, and there's a bit of a story attached to it. It was built by Skoda Motorsport, or the shell was done by Skoda Motorsport. Quite a lot of the work was done by Skoda Motorsport. And it was actually Andrew Wheatley, who is one of the senior people at M Sport.
Yes.
Yeah, Andrew's car. And he had it built. And I bought it off him and proceeded to blow the engine up right away. And it was built to kind of light Group A spec. And I should have went on gravel with it, decided to go on tarmac, and it didn't really work. I did BRC challenge in it. In about 2006 it was, and it was such a great car, but it broke my heart and I sold it straight away. I got it off the boat of the Manx, put it in my warehouse, which was in Liverpool at the time, put it straight on eBay, and it was sold the following day. And I don't know what happened to it. I've never seen it since.
Just going back to the Saab thing, sort of another, because I, in my list of ones that I wrote down, Volvos, rallying Volvos. So particularly 240s, you see them again.
The massive saloons, in Scandinavia. Massive in Sweden. Massive.
Yeah. Brilliant, though. Absolutely fantastic. I remember on the Woodpecker a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because
there was a guy who came over.
It was a 940, I think.
Yeah, something along those lines. Again, saloon
yellow, I think. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't work, but... Probably because I remember my father sliding our silver estate 240 round wet roundabouts when I was knee high to a grasshopper. So perhaps that's why I like them. But yeah, and Rickard Rydell in.
My dad had a chocolate brown 245 DL Volvo estate. Chocolate brown interior, chocolate brown exterior. And when I first passed my test, I built a Mark II Escort and it wasn't quite ready. So I used to go round my dad's Volvo. Now, it's very difficult to make a Volvo, chocolate brown Volvo estate, look cool to fellow 17-year-olds. My dad was a joiner, and he had like the joiner's horse in the back and all the tools and everything else.
Brilliant.
And so the only way to make it look cool was to go everywhere sideways in it.
Excellent.
And my dad used to set a trap for me. This is true. He used to take the lid off his tub of nails. And if he'd go out in the morning, lift the boot up, and if the nails were everywhere, he'd proceed to come back into the house and chastise me repeatedly for doing stupid things with his car. And that is a very, very true story. God rest him. So there you go. There you go. Alan Harriman, who obviously with no introduction, yeah. Group A Nova GSI. No,
what
surely not.
Like?
Well, absolutely. Again, another car that I've had.
there's no problem. Surely everybody likes that.
Yeah, Alan, I can only assume you've misread the tweet. That's the only thing I put down to. Fast Eddie, who always sends us stuff in. Renault 11 Turbo.
Right.
Apparently it beat some M3 Sierra Cosworth and Integrales in the 87 WRC. Plus it was my first hot hatch.
Yes, I'm not sure that's a reason to... Yes, fair enough. Yes, that's...
Yes.
That definitely works for this this feature, I think.
Luke Barry.
Yes.
Bless him. Luke sent in, again, it was a car that you shouldn't like. He's actually nailed it. I think this absolutely nails it because it's a car that, in theory, because what we've just spoke about, the accents, of course, we're talking about the Hyundai Coupe F2 kit car.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And yep. Again,
no, he's got it spot on there.
Colour scheme,
like that, then...
everything, it mm-hmm. worked. It worked, and they had some great drivers for it as well. And yes. Luke, I think you've won Twitter with that one.
he's very good, is Luke.
Yes,
I can
he
say
is.
That. I worked with him last year, so yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we got to. Now, we've kind of covered most of the ugly ducklings. Now, you see, this all started from you saying that the SX4 is actually quite nice in your eyes.
Yes,
in your beer,
in your
beer goggles, they're actually quite nice. What isn't nice in your eyes?
Can I add one more that's nice? Quickly?
Go on then.
Exige RGT. I always thought the Lotus that they did.
Okay.
Which very, I think it only rallied once in about in Italy somewhere, and it kind of shouldn't work. I wasn't quite sure, but I liked it anyway. There we go.
Okay.
That's one I like. Doesn't work. For me, it is the we've mentioned around the 307cc.
Yeah.
For me, just didn't work on all sorts of conceptual levels. I think there's things that you think, okay, that's incongruous to turn into a rally car, but I like the idea of it. And some things you just think should never be turned into a rally car. And that was, for me, that epitomizes what shouldn't be turned into a rally car.
Do you know what, as well, what probably kind of rubs salt in the wound for Peugeot Sport and all the guys at Peugeot at that point? That was at the point when Citroën was coming to life.
Yes.
And must have been looking across, and Citroën must have been looking across and saying things to each other in French, I can only imagine. Because I think they were quite competitive at the time with one another. And, you know, they had the Zara, and we all know what the Zara went on to become. And they had the 307cc.
And it was one of those things as well, you mentioned it, obviously, with certain cars being sort of better in certain colour schemes. The 307 had a fantastic colour scheme in terms of the sponsorship and stuff.
Yeah.
That red and white, if it can't look good in that, it's not going to look good.
I'll agree with, and I think probably what rubbed salt in the wound as well, still to my mind, the car that still blew me away the most from the World Rally Car era of that particular period was the 206.
Yes, absolutely, totally agreed. Again, liveries, that silver total livery on an old 205 T16, that would look good.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, right, if you may or may not remember this, and I'm sure you will, but before the silver livery, they actually did a white one.
Oh, yes, they do.
And that was the one that got me, to be honest with you. That was the one where I went, ooh.
Yeah.
And to the extent where a pal of mine was so obsessed with it, and bear in mind he's older than me, and I'm in my mid-40s, dare I say now. This was a few years ago, granted, but he then went out and bought a Tamiya car, and then went out in search of the shell and got a shell from another manufacturer and made it fit because he wanted a 206 World Car. And it was
brilliant.
Absolutely nailed it. He went, got the right wheels and everything. He really, he was obsessed with the 206 at the time.
I'm lucky enough to have actually had a passenger ride in a 206 WRC with Stefan Sarrazin, which was just that was a good day, because he's a bit of a hero of mine, because he's a proper sort of motoring polymath that you don't see very often these days. And ran a wet test track down at Peugeot's facility. That was a good day.
Did it have the wooden gear knob?
I did, yes.
Why? Yeah. Why did you ever? Yeah. Did you ask the question, or was one of those awkward things where you think, I want to ask him about his wooden gear knob, but I don't think I will.
Well, it's one of, because there's a history of it. It was in, it was the Porsche 917 that had the, everyone said it was Balsa, but I think it was actually Birch gear knob on it, which now gets sort of, you see it in various road Porsches, people sort of pay homage to that. There's a bit of a history in that. I'm not quite sure why, but it just looks quite cool somehow.
Now, I'm kind of conflicted with where I'm going to go with mine, because I put a picture out the other week about one of my liveries, funnily enough, as well. And I put out the Integrale, the Lancia Delta Integrale, the Evo 2, the wide arch one, and everything else was one of the cars that completely blew me away. Now, the non-wide arch version with small wheels and everything else, on the other hand, was appalling. So I've got on one hand this car that I love, and on the other hand one that I couldn't dislike anymore if I tried.
I mean, appalling is a strong word. That is going to set people sort of hackles up in some departments, I imagine. But
I'm sure somebody who's got one rotting in their garage, because you know that's invariably what happens to them, isn't it? Yeah, you only need to look at them with a tear in your eye, and the moisture from that tear basically works its way through its system, and before you know, you've got a pile of rust in your garage.
Right down the bottom. So
I'm kind of gone both ways. It's a car I love and a car that I don't like. So there you go. I know I there haven't really gave a definitive answer on that. But anyway, listen, Henry, I'm conscious of time and how much time you've taken of yours. What are you working on at the moment? What can people find you doing, and what's coming up for you?
I am. Most of my work is for Carfection, which is on YouTube as part of CNET. So I'm doing all the sort of the car films for them, which is good fun. So it means I keep driving fun stuff, and a bit of writing for Evo magazine as well. So I'm nice and busy, which is all good.
And the rally car will be wheeled out this year. Of course, you are also a proud owner of a shiny Mark II Escort.
The Mark II Escort will hopefully be wheeled out this year. I have bought a few more parts for it, so it's to try and make it reliable, because last time we went out, I think I went out not long after I spoke to you last, and we did the Woodpecker, we did the first stage of the Woodpecker, and then got towed out of the forest by a Unimog, which was quite cool, but not quite how Gethin Jones and I had planned on leaving.
There's cheaper ways of getting a ride than a Unimog.
There are, yes.
I'm pretty certain of it. Well, there you go.
But hopefully that'll be good. Can I do my predictions for Corsica?
Of course you can.
Can I jump in? Because I was thinking about it on the way up. I was thinking, I know we've gone done their predictions. So I was going to go left field like you, because I sort of, I'm reckoning Nerval's going to win it. Loeb's going to be second, having had to obey team orders because they've got their new cars apparently going to Corsica. And then Meek's going to come third.
Wow.
There you go. How's that for left field?
I don't think it's that left field, because Chris went very well last time he was there.
In Monte Carlo,
But he went last time in the Citroën as well. He went quite well.
Yes, he did. Yes, yeah. I mean, obviously Sebastian Ogier is going to win it, but that's my kind of, you know.
I love that. You've just gave me a prediction of Newell winning. But of course, Sebastian Ogier is going to win it. It would be, Citroën have got...
I know, that's what Trevor's going to have said, isn't it? So, yeah.
But. It's... I'm so bad at predictions. It's untrue. I haven't even done mine yet. But I tell you what, I'm going to do mine now. It's only fair. You've done yours. You've put them on the table there, I call it. So I will do mine. So I am going to go. I'm going to do it in reverse order. Ooh, I'll add a little bit in. Yeah. So I'm going to go Tanak.
Yes.
Loeb.
Yes.
Ogier.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to do exactly the same as you. I'm going to put the caveat in of team orders coming into play if it's manageable for Loeb to drop time. But that it would have to be manageable.
Yes. Yeah.
So if it's not, and it's just left to be, there I'm going to go. So I'm going to put Tony on top of that. So I know I'm going to put Henry there, and you and I shouldn't be betting people because we're probably completely and utterly wrong. There you go. Listen, my friend, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Folks, that has been the final episode of season 15. I hope you've enjoyed it. I do really appreciate the downloads. I do really appreciate all the guys that have got involved with obviously buying mugs and stuff like that and donating to charities. Obviously, we gave you the total as well at the top. So, you know, all that money raised has gone to some fantastic charities, and thanks to Kielder, you've all got fantastic mugs, and of course Dan Wee the Terriers, who's done the design on them. And again, thanks to Codemasters, we've given away some games. Well done to the winners of those, and we will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hall in about 2 weeks' time.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.